that factor. And basically what it says is that when the avalanche is created, then it is pair of electron and ion that is created. The thing is that ion is a mass. Proton is a mass, extremely large mass. At that point, we're dealing with the mass movement, and we're dealing with the hammering. It's like you have a hammer, it's a 10-pound hammer, and it's lying on the shelf. Nothing has happened. You take the hammer and you put it on a table, let's say 2 feet down, and nothing has happened. But a slighted hammer from the shelf is going to ruin the table. By that token, there is a very interesting phenomenon. You have a spark up, and you have a left side of the spark up and right hand side of the spark up. I was dragging the idea of transmission lines for the certain purpose, but before I go to that, when you create the first electron, because you deliver the potential difference, then the first cosmic ray, based on that article, which is a Harvard article, is hitting an electron. Then you have more electrons, then you have a movement of protons, and you have a pair. It's an electron and an ion with it. I can find the exact part of another article that is telling about it. Now you have a hammering of the right-hand side of the spark up. What is then happening is that you deliver more energy because the photon is a pure energy. So the cosmic ray is an energy. When the cosmic ray hits an electron in the right way, it adds to the energy. So on the right-hand side of the spark up, you have a more energy than on the left-hand side. And then, if you have a curvature of that signal, right before you hit the maximum, you try to catch that energy and deliver it back to the spark up. Now, interesting moment that is happening over there. The speed of plasma is slower than the speed of electron in the copper. So, let's say you have a capacitor that is connected in parallel to the spark up, but in very clever way. From one side, the capacitor is connected from left-hand side as a parallel one, but from the right-hand side, we're trying to develop something that looks like a Maxwell devil. In other words, is we're trying to catch the energy, then we close the gap. When we close the gap between the right-hand side of the capacitor, then we deliver by the capacitive coupling that energy to the left-hand side. With the addition of another pulse of the energy that we're adding from the left-hand side, we're delivering more of the energy from the left-hand side. That should work as an increasing indefinitely power of the energy delivered to the right-hand side of the spark up. And to XGS.
Yeah, a number of different concepts are being discussed here simultaneously, Wes, and let me take them one at a time.
Before we go for it,
air breakdown, if I put 30,000 volts per centimeter between two electrons in air at normal air pressure, I will start getting a breakdown of air. And why 30,000 volts per centimeter? And why when I partially evacuate the chamber that has the two electrodes, I can make the air breakdown at 15,000 volts instead of 30,000 volts per centimeter?
You can have it in 3,000 volts if you put the radioactive material over there. The reason that I brought this to your attention is because you have a cosmic ray on this video that was shown by the major university in United States as the detector of the cosmic ray. So it's not that you have a small amount of energy and then you have something that is omittable. No. This is addition to the energy and to exist.
Okay, that exact cosmic ray detector that is in your YouTube video, I saw that exact machine at Brookhaven National Laboratory roughly 1958-1959. It consisted of a whole bunch of horizontal wires in one particular plane. Behind it is another plane of horizontal wires, and there was probably 3, 4, or 5 planes of horizontal wires with high voltage between them. As the cosmic ray came along, you saw the track of the cosmic ray create a nearly straight line through the chamber that contained all of these individual planes of horizontal wires. It wasn't completely explained to me at the time, but what I believe was going on is that in between each plane of those horizontal wires, there was some number of thousands of volts. Each one of those planes of high voltage had a series resistor of some number that wasn't described to me. The reason I say that is because when the cosmic ray went through the chamber and created the breakdown, once you initiate a breakdown and initiate an arc, if the power supply had enough current capability, that arc would stay there forever. Each one of these arcs only stayed there for a small fraction of a second, so I'm guessing that the capacitance of each plane of wires was really the energy that got discharged in that gap once the cosmic ray went through and the air became ionized and the path became obvious. Your eye saw it. And then the series resistor, the capacitance would get discharged, the arc would go away, the series resistor in the next few microseconds or milliseconds would recharge those individual planes of wires, and the system was ready for the next cosmic ray. That was the cosmic ray detector that I saw at Brookhaven Lab in roughly 1958, and I think this YouTube video is showing a very similar device, a fun device, Wesley. But now let me tell you something about what happens during that discharge. During that discharge, you're creating a plasma. That's what the discharge is. The plasma really means that the cosmic ray hitting an air molecule, and it doesn't have to be air. It could be air at high pressure, low pressure. It could be neon, argon, helium. It could be any gas you want. Each gas has its own breakdown characteristic voltage and pressure and so on. Each one has its own so-called passion curve, breakdown voltage versus pressure. Every one of the gases has that, and it's pretty well known. But when a breakdown does occur, when a cosmic ray comes along and hits a molecule of whatever the gas is and discharges an electron from that molecule, and now you have a free electron on the right-hand side, and you've got the ion of the nucleus plus the rest of the electrons being slightly positively charged on the left-hand side, the two of them move in the appropriate direction because of the E field you've created of 30,000 volts per centimeter, for instance. The amount of volts per centimeter, the electron volts, determines exactly how much energy is going to occur between the instant of the discharge and how much energy arrives at the positive terminal and how much energy arrives at the negative terminal. If the cosmic ray hit midway between the positive terminal and the negative terminal, and if the gas is rarefied enough so that there isn't a complete avalanche, so that that particular plasma, that particular ion, the positive and negative ion, were free to move, the amount of energy they develop before they hit the electrode is strictly a function of volts per centimeter, the E field magnitude, and the distance that it's going. So if the gas was rarefied enough so that the cosmic ray hit midway between the two, even though the electron is very light and is moving fast, and the nucleus, is the positive charged ion, is very heavy and moving slow, when they get to their individual electrode, they have moved through the exact same number of electron volts, therefore the total energy they arrive at...
Repeater, time out.
Where are you, Deke?
Repeater, time out. Cancel.
It is my belief that the total energy they arrive at would be equal if it occurred midway between the two, and if the gas was rarefied enough that there weren't a whole lot of other collisions and more avalanche.
Give you another example, because I have a problem with this statement. N2XGN. you have a bucket full of water, and it's completely full, and the water is elbowing on the edges of the bucket. Another drop comes in. What is happening? You're creating the flow. There is an energy added, and that energy added is creating the flow. Now, you're forgetting about something else. Because of the small electron that is heated by the cosmic ray, you're creating energy flow. Addition to this energy flow is the energy of the cosmic ray. And also, you're moving much heavier particles, which is an ion. Now, for those who are listening, they have to know what is an ion. Well, if an atom has a six electrons and six positive particles, and then you have the equality, then you have you're losing one electron. That electron is acquired by another atom. Now this atom is being called the positron in the old terminology of the ions, and the other one is negatron. That's the old technology in Europe that was used for it, or ion that is negatively charged. Now there is an attraction, but that electron is moving this particle along with himself because it's creating the pair. Now you're moving a heavy mass into a sphere.
If I had a carbon molecule, I think carbon is number six, six protons and six electrons, and if I ionize it so that one of those electrons goes free, I've now got six protons and only five electrons. I've now got one unit of charge on the electron that's negative. I got one unit of charge on the ion, which is the nucleus, and the rest of the electrons, which is positive. And if each of those move through the exact same E field, the energy they pick up is called electron volts. So if I know how many volts, and I know that it's the charge of one electron that it's moving through, I know how much energy the electron has when it hits the positive terminal, and by the same token, your positive ion is moving through the exact same number of electron volts. In theory, it picks up the exact same amount of energy.
Yeah, but you added the energy. You say that the energy was added, like with a bucket of water, right or wrong?
When that cosmic ray hit that carbon molecule, yes, it created some extra, it is likely to have created some extra velocity of the electron that it freed up.
Now, change this velocity to the heat. You're going to create more heat. This is an energy. Whichever transformation of the energy happen, on the right-hand side of the spark gap, you're getting more than you have on the left-hand side, into exia.
So, as I was saying, the electron picked up some extra velocity because it was hit by the cosmic ray. How do you know that the cosmic ray hitting the nucleus didn't give it some extra energy? Did the cosmic ray give extra energy to the nucleus and the positive ion? Did the cosmic ray give extra energy to the electron that freed up when it hit that? The answer is yes to both. Which one did it give more energy to? That's a matter of the trajectory of that particular cosmic ray.
You have an attraction, multiple attraction. We're talking about a situation in which, at first, we have a potential difference. So when we have a potential difference, then we know that the left-hand side is the delivery part, which is the transmitter. The right-hand side is the receiver. Now what we're doing is we're creating a similar scenario to the Maxwell Deville, which actually what we're doing is we're catching the energy on the right-hand side, whatever the energy is, we're closing the gap between the right-hand side of the capacitor that is in parallel, we're delivering through the capacitive coupling, and don't forget about the electrostatic field in here. And then we actually have increased energy on the left-hand side for the amount of energy that is in excess of the right-hand side, if you know what I'm talking about.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you a direct question. Assume the cosmic ray hit a carbon molecule that's midway between the positive and negative terminal. It freed up an electron. The electron moved through the E field. It moved very rapidly because it's very light. and it hit the positive terminal with high velocity. The positive ion, which is much heavier, accelerated to the left toward the negative terminal. It moved more slowly, but it's more massive. The positive ion hitting the negative terminal and the negative ion, which is an electron, hitting the positive terminal, which one delivered more energy when it hit the terminal? Over to you, Wes.
Well, the answer is not very, very simple. To produce ultra-far switching, the spark gap is dramatically overvolted after the heating of the cosmic ray. That is that the spark gap is charged far in excess of its self-breaker voltage. Peaking gaps typically operate as gas pressures in range, let's say, of 100 atmospheres, if you want to take this kind of analogy, and electric field is in the MV centimeters range. So the self-breakdown curve for the gases is now as a saturated in the vicinity of 100 MV by meter for the pressures of, let's say, 50 atmospheres. The reason that I brought it to your attention is that if we deal with the rarefied gas, we're dealing with similar situation that is ionizing aurora in ionosphere. Now, should you say that this cosmic ray or the photon creating the thermal effect in the ionosphere is not a manifestation of the energy and to exist?
I'm going to backtrack four steps here. Once I created the positive ion and the negative ion, and they moved in their appropriate direction, the amount of energy they picked up before they hit the electrode is measured in electron volts.
Forget about the velocity. You're adding the velocity, which actually is stated in a number of papers that I gave you to consider the velocity, is actually the energy. The energy is then being transformed. The energy shows up on the right-hand side of the spark gap. Yes, it is. But you still are trying to omit the electrostatic activity.
If the only thing that's accelerating my particle is an electrostatic field, after it has moved through that field, the amount of energy the particle has picked up is measured in electron volts. Once I know the electron volts of that field, and I know the location where the ion was created, then the amount of energy the electron picks up, the amount of energy the electron picks up before it hits the positive terminal, and the amount of energy the positive ion picks up before it hits the negative terminal, I say those two amounts of energy are the same, assuming the cosmic ray gave equal amount of energy to the electron and to the proton in the way it hit. I'll admit there's ways it can hit where all of its kinetic energy could be delivered to only the electron or only the nucleus. But assuming it gave either zero energy to those, but it broke them up, or gave equal energy to both, the amount of energy the particle picked up is measured in electron volts, and that's proportional to the E field of that particular region. So right now, I'm not convinced that the electrons have more energy or the protons have more energy when they hit their appropriate terminal after that cosmic ray, assuming the cosmic ray treated both of them equally.
So that you're trying to say that the negative ions goes from left to right and positive goes from right to left. That's what you're trying to say?
Not only am I saying that, I'm saying that the amount of energy they pick up, even though one is heavy and one is light, the amount of energy they pick up is measured in units of electron volts, and therefore they can be equal amounts of energy. Even though the electron is light and moving fast, and the protons are heavy and moving slow, the total amount of energy is measured in electron volts, and the electron volts could be equal to the left and to the right. In that example, I believe, if the gas is rarefied enough, that there are no additional impacts taking place before they impact the terminals. That's my belief on this one, Wes. K2RIW.
Entry exam. Here's the point. You have a transmission line ahead, and you have two wires, and you deliver a sine wave. And sine wave gradually is going up, then down to the zero, and then below the zero and up. But one thing that people are trying to omit in here is the electrostatic activity. You cannot have in one wire 23% of the positive charge, and let's say the rest of it in the other wire. The electrostatic doesn't work this way. You either have left or you either have right. The same is the domains in the ferrite. Either the domain in the ferrite is north and south, or it's south-north. It's not going to be 23% south and the rest of it north. Although, in ferrite, you have a disoriented domain. That's what we will not take into the consideration is that whenever you deal with the electrostatic field, you have a hammering effect, which actually, because of this single cosmic ray, is simply impacting immediately the right-hand side of the star gap. Now, when you catch the maximum of the signal before it dies, before the peak goes down from the right-hand side, you're simply closing the switch. Now, by means of the electrostatic charge, immediately from the side of the capacitor, delivering the energy to the left-hand side, with addition of the energy that you normally deliver from the left-hand side. Enter SGN.
I think I disagree, and I'm going to give an example. Assume I've got either twin lead coaxial cable, a twin lead transmission line, or a single wire above a copper sheet as a piece of microstrip. Doesn't matter. But in either case, I've got a transmission line. I've got a very small amount of continuous resistance along the wire, and as current flows through the wire, that resistance gives me a small amount of heat, and with a thermal imaging camera, I'm measuring the heat. Assume I've also got a sheet of very mildly conducting material between the two wires. I've got a sheet of material between the two wires so that any voltage difference between the two wires creates a minor amount of heating of that sheet. So now the voltage waveform as it goes down the twin lead is creating some heating in the carbon wire and the carbon resistance of the sheet of material between the two wires. The current flowing down the wires is creating a small amount of heat due to the current drop across each of those resistors. I've carefully adjusted this so that the total energy loss through the wire through resistance is only 1%, and the total energy loss through the parallel resistance of a conductive sheet between the two wires is also 1%. And I now run an experiment where I put a fixed sine wave going down this transmission line, and I count 100 cycles. And the sine wave is going from left to right. It hits a perfect termination of the right-hand side, so there's only one direction the energy is flowing. And I allow 100 cycles to go down that lossy transmission line I've just described, and now I take a picture of that with a thermal imaging camera. I say the amount of heat I get along the wire is constant along the whole length. The amount of heating of the sheet of conducting material is constant along the whole length. In other words, the energy flow through every millimeter of that wire, with one wave going from left to right, the energy flow through the wire, I can measure...
Repeater, time out, cancel.
I can measure it by the 100 cycles of current waveform. I can measure it by the 100 cycles of voltage waveform. The energy flow during every millimeter of that transmission line is a fixed amount of energy loss. The whole piece of wire will have the equal amount of glow in my thermal imaging camera. The whole sheet of resistive material will have equal amount of glow in my thermal imaging camera.
How about capacitive reactance between the two pieces of wire? Let's say you exchange these two pieces of wire to two flat copper strips. Enter SGN.
It doesn't matter if my transmission line is two flat plates that are the squashed out equivalent of twin lead. It doesn't matter if they are round wires of ordinary twin lead. It doesn't matter if it's coax cable. It doesn't matter if it's one wire against a sheet of copper as microstrip. All transmission lines with one signal flowing in one direction have equal amounts of energy flowing through every millimeter of that transmission line.
And when the sine wave is changing the polarity because of the peaks and valleys, then the electrostatic, how does the electrostatic work? The electrostatic could work only immediately as the sine wave is gradual. Enter Exeus.
Remember now, I put 100 sine waves down there, and I measured the average amount of heating of every millimeter of the lighter and every millimeter of the conductive sheet after 100 sine waves have gone down there. I will admit that if I was using a stop-action camera, and I stopped the action at the instant that the first millimeter has the positive voltage, and the first centimeter has the positive voltage waveform, and the second centimeter has the negative voltage waveform, during that instant of time, there's different amounts of heating. But that whole waveform is going to slowly propagate to the right at the speed of the velocity of that cable, and everything becomes awash after one complete cycle. It certainly becomes awash after 100 cycles. So the total energy flow, when I average through a complete cycle, or the total energy flow when I go through 100 cycles, the energy flow through every millimeter of the transmission line is the same. The capacitive reactance between the wires is part of what's required to make the transmission line have a particular characteristic impedance.
Yeah, but my question was, how does the electrostatic switch? If we have a gradually changing sine wave, electrostatic doesn't work gradual. It's immediate change. How the electrostatic works with 100,000 volts in between the wires?
First of all, I'm using the wires in such a way that I'm not arcing them over yet. I've got a thoroughly linear transmission line. I'm not going to the place where it arcs over. All hell breaks loose when you do that. But if I'm using the transmission line in a linear manner, there are no hot spots if I don't have a standing wave. If the energy is flowing in one direction, every bit of the copper conductors of the transmission line have equal amount of heat. Every bit of the dielectric material between the lines has an equal amount of heat. The whole transmission line has equal heat if I have one signal flowing to the right and no standing wave.
You have answered the question. How the electrostatic works if it works immediately when you deliver the sine wave? How it changes the polarity?
The signal generator made the reversing polarity signal. The transmission line had nothing left to do but to convey it at its velocity factor from the signal generator toward the load. The sine wave was generated by the signal generator. The voltage waveform gradually goes up and down at the cyclic rate of the signal generator. The transmission line did not create that. It simply conveyed the energy created by the signal generator. There is no instantaneous change in voltage or current or electrostatic potential or whatever.
So at which point is the electrostatic changes?
The signal generator is generating a sine wave. When did the signal generator make an instantaneous change that you're talking about? I don't think it does it. Go ahead.
No, what I'm saying is when you change the polarity between these two wires from the twin leads in electrostatic means, if it's gradual, and we know that electrostatic is immediate.
Who said electrostatic is immediate?
You cannot have a 20% on one wire of positive charge and 80% of negative charge on the other one. It's a capacitor.
If you're using the twin lead transmission line correctly, it is being used in a thoroughly symmetric manner. At the instant the upper wire is plus 1 volt with reference to ground, the bottom wire is minus 1 volt with reference to ground, at that position, at that instant. If you're not going to have common mode propagation, if you only have differential mode, if you're using it correctly with the right kind of a balance, it is thoroughly balanced at every instant of time. There is a neutral plane of voltage midway between those two wires everywhere along the length. I could put a sheet of metal in between the two wires that goes to infinity up and down when the wires go left to right. I could put a sheet of metal between the two and nothing changes.
So in other words, you're saying that there is no electrostatic activity in between two wires?
I didn't say that. If at this instant of time, at this position of the wire, the upper wire is got a plus 1 volt with reference to ground, and the bottom wire has minus 1 volt with reference to ground. There is a 2 volt potential difference between the two wires at that location, at that instant of time. If the two wires were 1 centimeter apart, then there's 2 volts per centimeter of E field between the two wires at that instant, at that location. Over to you, Wes, K2LAW.
But the major part of that, what I picked up in here, is that when you have a spark gap and the speed of moving particles in the spark gap, which is mass moving, in the spark gap is slower than movement of the electrons in the copper or in the electrostatic field. Now, when you add to the spark gap the parallel capacitor, but you have a switch on the right-hand side that you close after the spark, each spark jumps, then you deliver into the left-hand side by electrostatic means the charge in much faster speed. That's one of the parts of the things that I was trying to explain. And the second thing that caused the problem for me to understand it properly is that if you look at the diagram that I put to your attention.
Now, Wes, you got to stop. You're approaching five subjects at once, one at a time. How fast do the electrons move through a copper wire?
Close to the speed of light, we could assume.
Good guess. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. The electrons in a copper wire.
I know that you've got to catch me. Could travel a few hours, a few days. I know that. We're talking about the skin effect, and we're talking about a certain frequency. I understand that perfectly, what you're saying.
Those electrons are marbles in a pipe. I plug one marble into the input end of the pipe, and a marble pops out of the input end of the pipe 1 nanosecond per foot later. So the effect looks like it's traveling a nanosecond per foot. Each individual electron in the copper wire is moving extremely slowly. The total number of electrons in a small amount of copper is huge. The total charge in the copper wire is huge. If Mother Nature would let me would do it, if she would let me drain the electrons out of the copper wire that goes between my battery and my starter motor, she would allow me to drain 200 amperes of electrons from that copper wire for 4 solid hours. That's how much charge is in that wire.
Yeah, but I'm talking about a skin effect. We're not talking about this is what is going inside of the electron. We're not talking about DC. My problem in here is that there are few factors that were never considered to be discussed. One of them is on the drawing in here. On the right-hand side, you have a high voltage and zero current. On the left-hand side, you have a maximum current and zero voltage. The problem that I have is, as long as you have a high voltage and no current, it's like an outlet. Nothing is connected. But when you have a current and you have no voltage, the current is the flow. The current is not the constant state. You cannot have a flow without the voltage. But you have a maximum voltage. Enter here.
Just because we have skin effect at RF frequencies doesn't mean that the total number of electrons being used is extremely large. The skin effect in a copper wire means that at 30 megacycles, the skin effect is probably 1/10,000th of an inch. 1/10,000th of an inch of depth of the copper wire of the twin leads is maybe only 1% of all the copper that's there. 1% of the charge that's there is still a huge number. Those electrons, I'm using very few of those electrons when I'm putting all kinds of amperes through that copper wire. So even though it's skin effect, it's still marbles in a pipe. I put some marbles into the front end of the pipe, and I get some marbles out of the back end of the pipe very fast, but for that electron, that particular electron to go through the pipe is extremely slow because there's so damn many guys in front of him. They all have to be drained first. So total real velocity of the electrons in the copper is very slow. You were saying it's fast. Right there at the molecular level, we've got a bit of a problem, I think.
Well, I'm talking about comparing two environments. One is the plasma and one is the copper. From the articles that I have read, a speed of the electron in plasma is exactly the speed of an ion in plasma as it's paired to an ion. An ion is a very, very heavy big mass comparing to the mass of an arrow, electron. But when you connect the capacitor in parallel, then you're dealing not with ions without dealing with electrons, and you're dealing with the electrostatic action. That means that you cannot have 20% on one plate of the capacitor and 80% of the other one. You either have a plus or you have a minus. Now, the transfer of energy is quite faster than through the plus.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
When I charge a capacitor, I am taking some electrons away from one plate. I'm adding some electrons to the other plate. It's a thoroughly balanced structure. If my capacitor had only two plates, I could put a sheet of metal midway between those two plates and nothing would change. There would be positive charge on the upper side of that plate, there'd be negative charge on the lower side. The capacitor is a thoroughly balanced object.
Yes, but then you're dealing with the spark that has two factors in here. It's a plasma that is flowing slow, and it's electrostatic movement also in the plasma is much faster. In other words, we, because of the cosmic rays, we're dealing with the hammering effect. The hammering effect gives you impulse in within the impulse. And to Xia.
Question, Dick. I'm going to go over to you in a second, John. If I have two electrons in a gaseous material, and a breakdown does take place, whether it's due to a cosmic ray, whether it's due to some nuclear material nearby, or whether it's just because I've exceeded 30,000 volts per centimeter, no matter what, I get a breakdown. Under normal circumstances, the breakdown usually starts an avalanche, you and I call it a spark, across that gap. The spark is a negative impedance device, it's got extremely low resistance to it, and it discharges the high voltage that you got across those two electrodes pretty fast. If I put a great big capacitor between those two electrodes, because you cannot instantaneously change the voltage on a capacitor, I now have the capability of making a huge current flow in that plasma for a short period of time until that capacitor is discharged. So by putting a capacitor between the two electrodes, the capacitor is now going to supply a whole lot of electrons to the negative electrode. It's going to steal a whole lot of electrons away from the positive electrode. As that capacitor gets discharged, you've now almost maintained the instantaneous voltage between the two electrodes, even though you've got a negative impedance. You've now drastically increased the brightness of that spark during the time the capacitor is discharging. So I can see a lot more energy of that discharge if I put a capacitor across it, as opposed to having a normal power supply.
Then you're forgetting about one thing. When you have a capacitor, the magnetic field in between the plates of the capacitor goes to the right-hand side rule. It means it's influencing, if it's facing the spark gap, it's influencing the action in the spark gap. And to exist.
If I studied local magnetic fields, the two wires coming out of the capacitor is where the current is flowing, and around those wires, by right-hand rule, I'm going to have a huge amount of current flowing and a huge amount of magnetic field on each one of those wires. Inside of the capacitor itself, it's very difficult to develop that magnetic field in the presence of those metallic sheets.
The Russian scientist Vladimir Yudkin proved, and many other scientists have confirmed that. You have a capacitor, you have a plate. The charge between the plates is positive, negative on both plates. By the magnetic field that you create in between them goes to the right-hand side. Now, if you then direct that vector into the spark gap by itself, you're increasing the action of the spark gap. And to Andrea.
Are you saying the magnetic field that exists between the plates of the capacitor during the discharge, are you saying it does something in a nonlinear manner?
That is correct.
The nonlinear manner causes what to happen?
What is happening is, because you have a very fast changing of the polarity in electrostatic means between the plates of the capacitor, then basically you're creating the magnetic flux that is based on the velocity of the charge. That means that what you're actually doing is you're delivering the punches of the magnetic field that is influencing the spark up as that magnetic field is directed to the spark up by itself. So the small action of the cosmic ray creates an avalanche of electrons. It creates a movement of mass, which is an ion. And then what I said is about the Maxwell devil is you're closing the gap after each spark with a capacitor. Now the capacitor changes the polarity. Now the magnetic field is simply directing to the spark up by itself. Now you have a double magnetic effect, a double hammering effect on it. And to engineer.
Are you saying that there is a resonant circuit created between the spark gap, the inductance of its lead, and the capacitor that's across the spark gap?
Of course it is. The spark gap by itself, it's a plasma. And the plasma by itself creates very much non-linear E-field and magnetic field. Now you have an interaction between those two. The magnetic field creates a current in the conductor, changing magnetic field. Now you have two changes. One is the change in the capacitor. The other change is nonlinear change in the spark by itself. What was proven, at least by the scientists, is that the hammering effect is increased. What was then measured and theoretically said is that on right hand side of the spark gap you have more energy than on the left hand side. All you got to do is just return it faster to the left hand side. Now you're dealing with the increasing a kind of a John would help me out how to name it properly. That waveform that we've got in Lithuania. Let me drop. That was a that looks like a bell. John.
Yeah, it sounds like a ring down oscillation.
The reverse ring down. It was starting slow, increasing high, and was interrupted by the spark when it ended. It's not the ring down, it's the ring up. Now, this kind of curves was achieved by me and by plenty of other guys. It's plenty of information on the internet on it, and I can deliver you the pictures. Also, I brought to your attention the articles of Vladimir Yudkin and to Xian.
John, you had something you wanted to say? KC2WGB? K2RIW?
KC2WGB, yeah, we're going to lose the repeater in a couple of minutes. Dick, I have a problem wrapping my head around what he's saying about the spark gap, about the electrons traveling faster in the spark gap, or in the plasma. But take a load, a power supply, two wires, put a spark gap in series with it. Now, aren't all those electrons going to travel at the same rate of speed?
No, he says the plasma is slower than the electrostatic change in the capacitor.
No, that's not what you said. You said it travels faster than it does in copper. Those are your exact words.
No. If I said that, I didn't mean that. I say plasma is slower, but then you're catching the signal on the right-hand side. You're delivering it to the capacitor, creating the magnetic field. You're interacting with the plasma again. And to exist.
Wes, you said the plasma is slower. Slower than what?
Than the electrostatic interaction of the plate of the magnet of the capacitor, or the speed of the electrons in copper. That means flowing the current in copper.
It can't be.
The speed of the electrons in the copper is extremely slow if I'm counting one electron and watching it move.
Yeah, but the delivery of the signal, you got to understand that we're talking about the information. When you put the power supply, immediately from the other side you have a signal, you have a data because of that movement. So treat it as the data by itself. It's quicker than the data delivered through the plasma.
Go ahead, John.
No, that's all right, Dick. That was my question, but I don't understand it.
Very simple. before the spark would be able to jump from left hand side to the right hand side of the spark gap, and you compare the same what's going on in the piece of the wire, that information will be sent much faster because of the Maxwell effect than it's in plasma. The signal, then we deliver it faster through the electrostatic means back to the left hand side. But in the meantime,
where are you, Deke? Must be able to talk to you.
Thank you.